This is a little bit of the soundtrack music from an unbelievably classic film. And I say that with all my heart. It's called Jesus in India. And it's available on the DVD. You can pick it up by going to JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. And we have a link to it on the website, by the way, at JerryPippin.com. And also an interview with Paul Davids about the movie. Well, I thought we'd talk to Paul about some general things, mainly showbiz.
Always great to see you again, Paul. I know we've talked before. One time I did a broadcast from Roswell, and you made a movie about Roswell. In fact, recently you made a speech to a group of people about all of the victims of Roswell and what they had to say, the second or third tier witnesses. Did you find out anything new? Can you tell us anything here?
Well, I talked a lot about what we've learned in the last decade since the movie Roswell came out from Showtime.
And that is available on the DVD now.
Artisan came out with the DVD, and people who'd like to get it can find it at Amazon.com very easily. There's a number of shows that have the title Roswell in it, so they have to look for the one that's the movie that stars Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen and Dwight Yoakam.
May I want to get into something else with you, the far afield from Roswell, in a moment, but maybe you could give a thumbnail about something interesting about Roswell and not everybody knows. I mean, you know everything there is to know about these people.
Oh, I doubt it.
Yeah, well, you seem to. You've done lots of research. We talked originally how you...
Let's put it this way. I know what they tell me.
Okay.
Only they know what's true. One of the most interesting things I've seen in the last... decade or some of the people who've come forward, people with a reputation, part of the establishment, part of the military or NASA, who've made confirming statements about the extraterrestrial nature of the Roswell crash. And, you know, that would include two astronauts, the late Gordon Cooper, who we sadly lost recently, wrote a book, a biographical book called Leap of Faith, and in the book he confirmed what he had told me previously privately and what he said in several video interviews. And he's quite insistent and unequivocal that there has been alien contact and that the information has been withheld from the public.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the movie business, since we teased our audience about the UFO thing.
Sure.
Some interesting things happening with the movies these days. I think you have a new project yourself, don't you? You've been involved in a few things. You're working on something. You guys, Hollywood guys, always are.
Well, you always have 10 irons in the fire, and you see which stake falls into the fire and burns, and which one come out medium well or very well. No, I think there's a few things I'm not prepared to announce yet on the radio, but Richard Hoagland and I have had a project in the works for a long time, and we thought we were going to have a green light from the studio we were working with, RKO Pictures, one of the oldest studios in Hollywood. In fact, they made King Kong back in the 30s, and after a lot of development with RKO, their production plans fell out for all of the pictures that they were working on and developing, and it left us in limbo for a while, but I can see the daylight now because there's been some renewed and very, very strong interest in what I think is an absolutely excellent, excellent project, a tense political thriller that has so much to say about what's been happening right here on Earth while we've been trying to make those discoveries on Mars, the political battles.
Sorry. As I guess they say, pre-development instead of post-development or whatever.
Well, development is the phase of a project when you're putting the screenplay together and getting it to a point where everybody can say, that's it, that's what we're going to shoot. we've been in development with the project for several years.
Further along than that.
Yeah, we have a screenplay ready to shoot that's generating a lot of excitement.
It seems Hollywood likes sequels all of a sudden. Have you noticed that?
Well, it's not been all of a sudden. It's been for a couple of decades now.
Yeah, I guess it's a business reason.
Well, Jerry, it is because the studios want franchises. You want to reduce your risk, and if you have a project that's been a success, Jaws 1 generates Jaws 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a half.
Easy to get money for those projects.
Well, particularly the most successful ones, the studios are eager to follow up a successful act. Occasionally, the filmmaker puts the brakes on. You haven't seen a sequel to E.T. You haven't seen one to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Bring people out.
Well, you're a scriptwriter as well.
Yes.
Which helps, I imagine. When we talk about Hollywood, you've had TV projects, lots of TV projects too. At least you've talked to. Now, one of the things you're involved in. See, I got to find out what Paul David's up to.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about something from the past, and the Transformers show was probably the most popular cartoon show in the United States in the late 1980s. Was based on the Hasbro Bradley toys, the Transformer toys, the robots.
Yeah, I remember
they
that.
Changed shapes into everything. And we had 150 toy characters that we based that show on, with the stars, of course, being Megatron and Optimus Prime. There was one film made. I hear now they're going to make a major feature film of the Transformers using state-of-the-art CGI effects. I'm really looking forward to it. We have a Transformers convention, at least one every year in a different part of the country. There's one that's called BotCon, Robot Convention, BotCon. Mm-hmm. But the characters of the Transformers are the Autobots and the Decepticons, so that's how you get BotCon there also. And thousands of fans show up every year. You have all the Transformer toys there, and we had some wonderful stories. I was aboard as production coordinator for over 80 half hours of that show. I was there for, you know, 90-95% of the life of the show. It was really fabulous science fiction, tremendous imagination, and these stories are now all available from Rhino Entertainment on DVD. There are these beautiful box sets that have come out. Where you can get all of the Transformer half hours that were ever produced. So I was in production on just about all of them, and then I wrote four episodes that are really remembered by these fans. It's amazing.
I bet that's a real kick. Have you been to some of those conventions?
I do go to the conventions. We had one in Pasadena this year. I was one back east in North Carolina a couple of years ago. And we get our original voice actors to come to these. Peter Cullen was the voice of our star, Optimus Prime. And the lineup of people to get Peter Cullen's autograph this year, I still call them kids. It's the adults in their 20s who grew up on these shows when they were 10. They stand in line 3 hours to get his autograph. Their patience to get my autograph is maybe 20 minutes.
Well, that's 19 longer than mine.
So that was a great part of my past. And the other thing I look back on so fondly was my involvement with Star Wars. Not the movies, but sequel books. And in the early 1990s, before we saw Star Wars number one, the one with the very young Anakin Skywalker. There was quite a number of years that went between, I believe it was 1983 was Return of the Jedi, as I recall. And into the 1990s we got the next Star Wars. So the folks at Lucasfilm were looking for a way to keep Star Wars in the mind of their fans during those many years. And my wife and I had come up with an idea for a series of books that eventually they found a publisher for them, Bantam Books. And we wrote books such as The Glove of Darth Vader and The Lost City of the Jedi. Then there was Zorba the Hutt's Revenge. Now, Zorba is Jabba the Hutt's father. We invented Zorba. Not to be confused with Zorba the Greek.
I guess he wouldn't have to have a father. You just can't really conceive that.
We did Mission from Mount Yoda and Queen of the Empire, in which Princess Leia almost marries the head of the Empire. And then there was Prophets of the Dark Side. Unfortunately, after about a decade, the books are, they went out of print, so you have to get them as used books now, but they sold millions of copies before they retired them after a decade, and it was quite a ride. They're all illustrated, and they're new stories. It's not the stories of the movies, but they follow Return of the Jedi. They take a 5-year period of time in the history of the Empire and the Rebel Alliance after the Return of the Jedi, and they sort of fill in the blanks there.
You know, the movie business, for instance, they spent $125 million promoting a recent film, which is just amazing to me, the money they spend on promotion alone. We're not talking about the production values, and the major studio ends up spending ungodly amounts of money. How come it costs so much for a major against an independent to put a motion picture out?
Well, you know, all the rules have changed, and the budgets have changed. I mean, today you can have an independent movie that costs more than $50 million and has major stars. Traffic with Michael Douglas was considered an independent picture. I think it was, you know, an $80 million budget. I mean, how is this an independent picture? The meaning of it all has changed, and the budgets are so large. The sophistication of special effects, the visuals, requires so much. It costs a lot to make them, and then you've got to make them a household word. And to do that, you know, you've got to have your posters on buses, on billboards across the country. You've got to be in primetime television. It's absolutely immense, and many of them fall by the wayside.
It's kind of event marketing for everything, then.
It is. Now, and I, you know, it's a trend I don't welcome necessarily. I mean, I think that it's a great place for the big pictures, but we need the small pictures. We need the intimate pictures. In the old days, well, when I was growing up, we always had the B picture. We had the double feature. You know, expensive picture, we're on budgets of, you know, $1 to $8 million, and there was a place for the $200,000 or $300,000 movie. And Roger Corman was a low-budget producer who produced hundreds of them. And you see, he was able to give so much young talent a break because the movies didn't cost that much. And that's what we've lost, what we don't have anymore. What happens to the...
Cannot even do that for television now.
No, the TV movies have such an expense. I mean, look at Steven Spielberg's Taken for the Sci-Fi Channel. 10-part miniseries.
Yes.
Immensely expensive. Look at Children of Doom. Well,
we were just talking about Adonis earlier.
The budgets are up and up and up and up. Now, you do have the film festivals around the country that show the small films. Once in a while, one of them will get picked up and will get distribution. It happened to me. Your viewers might not know some of my non-UFO films, but I'm an artist. I'm very interested in the arts. I invite your viewers to go to my website, pauldavids.com, and I spell my last name, David with an S, Paul Davids, one word. I've got an art gallery there with over 100 of my paintings, and I made a film about Vincent van Gogh called Starry Night, and it was made on a low budget. And it went to the film festival circuit, and finally Universal Pictures picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it out on video and DVD throughout the country. Then they started selling it to television around the world, and it's really gotten out there. But that was a stroke of luck. You see, it doesn't happen very often.
Starry Night.
Starry Night. Like the words of the song by Don McLean,
yes,
Starry, Starry Night. It's the name of a Van Gogh painting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fantasy in which the artist Vincent van Gogh, who only sold one painting in his lifetime, whose paintings are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, the aggregate of his lifetime's work today would probably value $2 billion. And he saw nothing. He saw $100 in his lifetime for the sale of one painting. 400 francs. approximately. So I have a fantasy story in which Vincent shows up today and finds out he ought to be a wealthy man. It's tough to collect the money.
Roy,
he needs an attorney.
Roy, I started saying, do we know an attorney for him? There's got to be one out there.
Well, he gets an attorney, but maybe he gets the wrong one.
You got to get... Now we know why Paul Davis is successful. He's getting these little twists in there. We have a link to your website as well on our website at jerrypippin.com by this interview. But if you're listening on the radio, it's pauldavids.com. It's an S, right?
Yes.
And speaking of websites, Paul, we don't want to forget about your latest movie, a great film, Jesus in India, themovie.com. On your website, the personal one, what kind of things can one find there?
Well, I have something about all of my projects. They'll find the Star Wars books. Okay. They'll find the movie Roswell. They'll find something about the first movie that I ever wrote, which called She Dances Alone, which had Max von Sydow and Bud Cort of Harold and Maude, and it was a story about the ballet dancer Nijinsky and his daughter. He was at one time Nijinsky, around before World War I, was the greatest ballet dancer in the world. And that was directed by Robert Dornhelm, who did the movie Rudy about Rudy Giuliani, and recently redid Spartacus, done many, many films. That was the first one for me. And then there was Roswell, and then there was a film I produced and directed called Timothy Leary's Dead. Now, that's a feature documentary about the life of the LSD guru of Harvard, the hippie days, Timothy Leary, and I worked with him filming this documentary the year before he died, and I collected clips of his whole life, and there's the words of a Moody Blues song written and sung way before he died called Timothy Leary's Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time they sang it, they were using it to mean he's irrelevant. The world has passed him by. But in my film, it refers to him dying, and it's about death.
You know, documentaries came in because of Fahrenheit 9/11 and things like that.
Yeah.
Before...
They're hot right now.
Yes, they are. That's all.
The ones that make a strong statement. You know what, but there's little documentaries and big ones, and there's personal documentaries, and there's... documentaries that star the filmmaker, and then there's erudite ones that just deal with the subject matter. But there is a newfound interest in the fact that a documentary can make over $100 million. I mean, Michael Moore, in business terms, absolutely unheard of. Now, I have a little documentary I'd like to call your listeners' attention to. It's called The Artist and the Shaman, and they can find it at Amazon.com. And it's my personal story of being an artist in Sedona, Arizona, working with a shaman, working with a Native American with mystic propensity, who took me up into the mountains, up into those red rock cliffs, and showed me, from a spiritual standpoint, what I should paint in order to capture the magic of the land. And he performed ceremonies while I created a series of very unusual paintings of Sedona. And we, in the course of this, discovered a strange connection between his son, his little boy, and my departed father. And the movie explores the mystery of the connection between his son and my father. So that, it's such a small documentary, you have to find it at Amazon.com. It will never compete with Fahrenheit 9/11.
I didn't realize you were in Sedona for a while.
Yes, I've spent a lot of time in Sedona.
Okay, well, that explains the charisma, right?
I hope so. It's a beautiful part of the country.
And before I let you go, Paul, one other thing. Location seems to be important in movies and television. Vegas has had lots of TV shows, only two are successful. This current, the one on NBC, I think it runs it sporadically. That's another thing, I think, as a television producer. It'd be kind of tough. You get the time slot and keep it for over 6 weeks. You got to build it up, and they don't give you any time.
Well, it's a war to establish yourself, to get into a second season. Primetime television is incredibly competitive. And of course, now we live in the era of reality TV, which is a whole other equation where you don't have the scripting. But in the movies, it's the same thing. It's the battle for the Friday night grosses, the opening night grosses. A big film either makes it on that first Friday night or bring out the handkerchiefs and start weeping.
Thanks very much, Paul. I've enjoyed it.